Each week, once a week during the academic year, the St. Paul's preschool students gather for chapel services in the chapel up there. And one of the children's favorite songs is a song about how God can do anything. And it's really fantastic because there are hand motions that include a flex of each bicep. And with apologies to the choir, I'll just fill you in. It goes like this. My God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do. Two claps, yeah. Some of you here who graduated from the preschool will remember this song. It's fantastic. So this particular song does really well to illuminate certain stories in the Bible that the children learn and that we learn. For example, we sing the song in preschool chapel on the week that the children learn about Jesus calming the storm, and we sing it when we learn about how Jesus fed the 5,000. And the way that this particular song fits in with the events of the crucifixion are less clear. The days after Jesus' crucifixion, the one who Jesus' followers thought was so big and so strong and so mighty had gone into the grave. This morning we hear a story in the Gospel of Luke, which recounts how on the same day that the women had discovered that Jesus' tomb was empty, two more of Jesus' disciples were walking away from Jerusalem. They had their backs turned to Jerusalem and were walking towards Emmaus. It was Cleopas and his companion, we hear. So these two had yet to see the risen Lord, and their expectations, their hopes that Jesus would be the Messiah and the political liberator had been shattered. One line by these two travelers stands out. They say, "We had hoped he was the one to redeem Israel." This response, "we had hoped," this response reflects that most people in Jesus' day believed that at a very minimum, the Messiah would liberate Israel politically from Roman military occupation, at a minimum. So Jesus' crucifixion, which was a Roman style of execution, left them in shock. And they were grieving their friend. On their walk away from Jerusalem that day, the disciples talked about their hopes for what Jesus was going to do, and they even talked to Jesus, we learn. So within this story, as the dramatic irony builds, the stranger saddles up and walks next to them. He's telling them stories that they already knew about God in the scriptures. But this time, as he's talking to them, he shows them that God needed to enter into the pain of the world and be wounded by that pain and be killed by that pain in order to save it, in order to save Israel. So I want to come back to that phrase, the way that Luke phrased the two disciples' disappointment. We had hoped. That little imperfect tense of a verb is an incredibly honest way to begin a sentence, isn't it? We had hoped. I wonder how often we hear that phrase when we're talking to friends or family. I think we don't speak it out loud that often. I think children tend to be more willing than adults to name their failed hopes and expectations. And if you have very young children at home, that's probably an understatement. But the more birthday candles that we blow out in life, the more failed expectations, the more failed hopes that we've had for our lives and for the world tend to accumulate. And we may wonder where God is in all of that. Easter Sunday sometimes can bring in this tidal wave of joyous hope for all of us. And then as the great 50 days of Easter go on, sometimes that tide can feel like it recedes, and we're left with our own hopes, still wondering and still waiting, and maybe even our own expectations of what God can do for us start to wane. The travelers on the road to Emmaus must have been famished by the time they finally got off the road and went inside for the night. It wasn't until Cleopas and his companion were at the dinner table with Jesus, until they saw that that was the same Jesus who had calmed the storm and fed the 5,000, They understood why their hearts had been burning within them on the road. The story says that Jesus took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. These words are identical to all three accounts of the Last Supper in Luke, Matthew, and Mark. And it was at the table that the two travelers were brought into communion with God before they understood or believed. In that moment that Jesus broke the bread at their dinner table, it says their eyes were opened. That's when they finally recognized that it had been Jesus walking with them, listening to their sorrows, and talking to them the whole time. For us, the breaking of the bread at the Eucharist is a reminder that Jesus entered fully into human pain and suffering and now stands on the other side of death. Last week, we read in the Gospel of John about the disciple Thomas, who felt that the accounts of the resurrected Jesus were just too good to be true. So Thomas needed to see Jesus for himself. That's what he asked for. Both Thomas and the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, they all refused to be satisfied with their hope about who God was going to be until they got personal responses from the risen Lord. And as George proposed in his homily last week, Jesus sought out these disciples more than they sought Jesus out. Thomas and the two on the road stand for all of us here today. We've heard the reports, but we haven't seen the risen Lord. We may hear it in different ways that God is so big, so strong, and so mighty, but like the two travelers, some of us will probably find it more reasonable to turn and walk away from the crucifixion. As our hopes in life accumulate, as they do, and our failed hopes accumulate, each Sunday, we remember and we celebrate that first Easter. Each and every one of us is invited to God's table to receive God's healing and forgiveness and renewal. Each time that we're at the table, may we each be reminded that Jesus seeks us out and walks beside us and ultimately is on the other side of death. And if that is too much to believe, then we might remember that we are in the company of the apostles.